Hallo julle, dankie dat ek hier kan wees. Ek was vreeslik bekommerd, want ek is Afrikaans, Afrikaanse moeder, so ek het Afrikaans groot geword, my Engelse pa gehad, en nou is ek met die Engelsman getrouwd, so ek praat vreeslik baie baster, jy weet, so bykie Engels spreek Afrikaans, en toe sê ek, toe aankom, but I speak English and I speak Afrikaans, boy. Well, I mean all of you. So ek sê met thuis dadelijk, ek hoef nie te bekommer hoe dit gaan uitkom nie, julle gaan weet waarvan ek praat, en ek weet nie waar my neef al hierdie goed vandaan kry nie, maar nou ja, ek is een ouma van vier en dis vir my baie trots. Ek is baie trots op. En vir oggend, toe ek het gecheck op my phone, want my neef het nou vir my WhatsApp gestuur met die directions to find this place, en toe kon ek het nie vind nie, en toe sit ek my brilhuisie neer, en toe vind ek die phone. So, nou sit ek hier met my stapel van wat ek wil van praat, maar my bril weet ek nie waar dit is nie, so. Good luck. ja, sjoe, daar is so baie om te vertel, en daar was vir my gesê, ek het net 10 minuut en toe groei dit na 20, en nou is dit 30, so you can tell me when I have to stop. Maar nou ja, God is great. Sjoe. I knew this was going to be happening. I cried throughout the sermon. This is such wonderful worship. Thank you. And the gentleman who brought the word about the baby on the mother's breast when a mother forsake that child. That was my mother's favorite scripture, so I'm finished. Right, how did I start? Okay, hold this while I blow my nose. So, I mean, here I'm a makeup artist and I've cried all my makeup off already, so never mind. Okay, I need to blow my nose. Okay, right. Yeah, okay, I was always a fat little girl and believed the lie of the devil, that I was fat and ugly. And so when I was 12 years old, I started playing with makeup. And I would phone all my friends and say, don't you want to come and play makeup? anyway, and that's how my love affair with makeup started. And but sadly, or fortuitously, I had a brain and had to go to varsity, colored in all my friends. And so that was just the beginning of it. Then I did do psychology and social work, and my first job was in the prisons, amazingly. I worked liaising between the men in prison and the families at home. And then my husband said, you've got to decide which is more important to you, your children or these men in prison. Anyway, because my problem is I get very emotionally involved with people. And I take over their lives and I try to sort out their lives. So you're not empowering anybody at all. And but that was kind of the beginning of the prison thing. And then forgot about it, had babies, looked after them, worked for the family business, and at age 40, got the crook of my life because, and I'm sure you all know this, I mean, yesterday we were 18, and suddenly today we're 40. What happened? That means tomorrow, the next day, I'm going to be 60. And I'm going to be in the old age home. And my hands are going to shake. And I'm never going to be able to use this amazing gift God gave me of making people look beautiful. So my husband said, okay, I'll give you 2 years. Get this thing out of your system. Well, I'm 66 coming up November. I'm not in the old age home. My hands are not trembling. God is great, and I have lots of exercise and 4 little boys who keep me climbing trees and going down slides and doing the craziest things, which I absolutely love. But okay, so that's just a bit of intro of how I got into the makeup thing. And so here I am, and a lot of women are coming to see me. Their hairdressers are sending them to me because they're kind of 40-ish, and you know, 40 is a difficult stage. And for men too. This is the trauma for me to have to talk to men in a group. I only speak to women as a rule. So I've just decided, as someone prayed with me, men have mothers and sisters, so there maybe there are things they need to hear. So here we go. so women were being sent to me by their hairdressers because their husbands were having affairs or working too much and just not having time for them, and so they have low self-esteem. And so, sure, this is an opportunity for me to talk to them about the word. And you know, no one can say to you, well, they're sitting in your chair and they've got no makeup on, so they can't go running somewhere. So I just started saying to people, do you know what I read in my quiet time this morning? And that's how it kind of started, like a little ministry, but I never saw it as such. It was just to uplift people as the word uplifts all of us. I actually need to share with you how I came to know the Lord, but I'll finish the story first. So, okay. And I'm realizing, but this is wonderful. I'm enjoying this work so much. First of all, when I started doing makeup, everyone said, but what about your education? What a waste of education. Let me tell you something now. Nothing that ever happens to you in your life, or nothing that you've prepared or not prepared, God has a purpose with every single thing. So here I am with all my social work and psychology and my coloring in talent, and God is using me amazingly. So now I'm driving back from, I was working in Nisner at the time, and I'm thinking, sure, Lord, this isn't like work. This is just such a blessing. And you're coloring in people, and they don't know you from anywhere, so they pour out their hearts to you, and you're in a position to say, but can I pray for you? Sure, that's not work. Okay, so I'm driving home from Nisner, and I'm chatting to the Lord, and I'm saying, sure, Lord, there's not that much money in this. And my son's first year med school, varsity at Tigerberg. And I'm thinking, shouldn't I just stop and go back to social work and at least get a definite income every month so that you can budget? Okay, God, you've opened doors for me. Close them if this is not where you want me. I'm putting it in your hands. This is Friday afternoon, 5 o'clock, driving back to PE from Nisner. Monday morning, 5 to 7, the phone rings, and it's a woman whose sons were at pre-primary school with my son. And she said, Estelle, ek weet of jy my nog sal onthou nie. Maar ek sit met my stilte tyd vanoggend en ek lees Jesaja 61 en ek sien net jou gesiggie. Gaan lees dit, miskien is daar iets vir jou. Isaiah 61 tells us that I have anointed you to heal the brokenhearted. To replace the garment of ashes with a crown of beauty. And all I see is beauty. Okay, Lord, I'm in. I'm going to carry on with this. And and so it's grown since then. So next step, I mean, this all happens within 2-3 weeks. I have a client who's been coming to me for many years. She's a judge up in Polokwane. And whenever she comes to PE, because she's from the Eastern Cape, she comes to see me to check that she's still looking beautiful and if there's anything else she must buy. And she said, Stelly, what did jy gedoen van ek jou laaste sien het? Oh, my seun het getrou. And ek was in die tronk. I forgot to tell how I got in the trunk. Anyway, so she just says, you're not paying your speeding fines again. So I said, no, listen, this is what happened. I did a short course, Women of Peace. I don't know if any of you know of the Women of Peace course, but anyway. And it was about 2 months before my son was getting married. And I mean, this is what I do. I make brides beautiful. It's my work. I know about weddings. I'm at weddings every single Saturday. And everything the children are planning, I've got to chirp. But my husband says, leave this. It's their wedding, not yours. But I know what to do. I know what they, you know, where they need to be going. And he said, it's their wedding, not yours. So anyway, I hear of this Women of Peace course. I go to the Women of Peace course. And people are so correct. But I must say, not that you people are not correct. You show your hearts. You wear your heart on your sleeve, which is wonderful. I'm kind of like that. So I go to this course, and everyone's asked, why are you doing this course? And everyone's got a very polite, sweet reason why they're doing it. And it's my turn. So I said, I'm here so that I don't put a knife in my husband's back before my son's marriage. And everyone's like, horrified. But because he was owing my entum, you know. So anyway, so now, one of these women in this group worked for Rechtshulp. And so she phoned me, it was Women's Day. And she phoned me and said, there are 120 women in the North End prison in Port Elizabeth, of whom 30 have been very well behaved. So for Women's Day, they were going to treat them and give them a tea. And would I come and speak to them? And I said, of course, it'll be fabulous. And everyone said, oh, no, not Estelle Cunningham. Estelle Cunningham will never go into prison. Little do they know that Estelle Cunningham started out in prison. But anyway, so on the morning, I wake up and suddenly I realize, sure, these are not my normal people I work with. I can't just go with my little Clarence makeup bag, because I love Clarence. It's not a word for them, but it's a natural thing, and I get a rash for nothing, and I don't for Clarence. Okay. I can't take my Clarence kit in to prison. So now I'm going through all my old makeup. And I take a pack of wet wipes and an ice cream Tupperware full of makeup, and I'm going to have fun with these women. And on the way there, I prayed about it, and I said, Lord, just help me not to be condescending. Anyway, it was huge. So, and to treat each one of these like one of your children. And that's what happened. I got there. There were these 30 women looking disinterested or angry and just sitting there looking at me. And when I'd walked in, there was one sitting with, she had a cut across the back of her head. And she was just sitting there. She wasn't present. And I thought, sure, I'm going to choose you to work on. Which I did. And they were pretty disinterested because, I mean, they're in prison. And I treated this little girlie. I picked her up. She was short and thick. And I picked her up and put her onto, like me, and I put her onto a table so that the other could also see what was happening. And I took my wet wipes and I pretended she was my little girl. And I wiped her face clean. While I was doing that, I was thinking, shoo, did her mommy ever, with a sloppy, clean her face? Ow. Anyway, having done that, and all they want to do is tell you why they're there. And you don't want to know. Anyway, so with my wet wipe, I cleaned her face and I put some cream on her and just a little bit of lipstick, a little bit of bronzing powder, a little bit of eyeliner. And that was it. Took her to the mirror and she had such low self-esteem, she couldn't even look at herself in the mirror. And everyone's clapping and cheering. I mean, it's not huge makeup, it's just a little bit of makeup. And she goes to the mirror and she can't look. And they're all clapping and cheering and coming, and eventually she sort of beeps and looks away. And then she took a step nearer and another little peep. And then she stepped to the mirror and she straightened up. Her whole posture changed. And she swanned around that prison as though she were Miss North End Prison, you know, just... the self-esteem immediately. Now everyone's clamoring. They all want to be colored in. Well, I spent the day there. I colored in every one of them, and it was just so exciting. Because inside, we're all little girls, and we all want to be pretty. Anyway, so I go home. My mom lived with me at that time. And I said, Mama, vandag het ek 'n goeie ding gedoen. The next week, Sedet, my friend who's the judge, comes through. Okay, what have you done? This is just to put the story, bring the story back to the story. Okay, so I said I was in jail. And she said, what will you charge me to come up to Polokwane and work in the prison there? I'd be silly, I can't charge anything. Just pay my airfare and give me my own bed with my own bathroom and clean sheets. You know, I don't, that's it. So she's, and amazing God's timing. She was on her way to Cape Town to have lunch with Judge, I forget his surname because we're now on first name terms, but anyway, Judge, no, I'm not going to flip, anyway, so okay, so I think they'd hardly sat down for lunch because it was like 12:30 and she phoned me and she says, Nathan's so excited, he'll sponsor you. So Judge Erasmus, Nathan Erasmus, has been sponsoring me for the last 10 odd years. At first, we were doing it 4 times a year. Now we just do it once a year. And I work with the short-term prisoners. So that thing from
how the seed was planted. So now we go along, and you'll find most of them are there for strange things, well, obvious petty theft, violence against the spouse. You don't think of that, do you? Then I thought, remember, why did I do that course? You know, how easy it could have been for me. There, but for the grace of God, go I. It's not a glib little statement. It's the truth. And all sorts of things. Anyway, so there are three things. It's the violence against the spouse, it's petty theft, and it's fraud. And so now you go in and you make them pretty. I don't have time to do all of them. And there's a judge by the name of, they call him Judge Joe. I forget his surname, but this man is a Lemba. A Lemba is a black Jew. And so they know the word, and they know the law. And he is such a highly thought of judge that he's invited, if the United Nations can't settle a case, they fly Bra Joe over. And Bra Joe, this is just a bit of an aside, Bra Joe and Cyril Ramaphosa studied at school and varsity together. So please, God, do give Cyril Ramaphosa wisdom as well. If they can sort out, if Joe can sort out the crime of the world, please, God. So moving on, whenever I am in Polokwane, he will come and listen. So now we move to another prison, and this one, 120 women were there this day. We spent the day with them. And again, to treat everyone with respect, and there were a lot of young girls there. And so what we did, I pretended the one was a TV announcer. I just gave everyone like a fake identity and we played with that. But while I was doing that, there was an older woman, tall, beautiful woman, very statuesque. And she looked like a queen. You know, she had this long neck. And obviously the women had a lot of respect for her. And she was reciting poetry in a language I didn't know. It would be Venda. And I couldn't work. I had to turn around and look at her, and we connected, and both of us were crying. And afterwards, I asked, what on earth is she there for? Because obviously she carries a lot of respect, and she's peaceful, and she's like a mother. And I was told that she's there, she's a lifer. It's a lifer, because I don't work with lifers. I only work with short-term. But if she's a lifer, what's she doing here? This is her story. She had a terrible husband who used to drink and come home every Friday night, having drunken out all the money for the week, and they would beat her up and her sons. So they made the decision, she and her sons, that they were going to murder him, because they'd rather spend the rest of their lives in prison than living with this man. So that's what they did, and they then went and handed themselves over. But she is in for life, but she writes the most beautiful poetry, which I can't understand. But my point is, I had a connection with this woman. And how sad that is, that you should have to be driven to a point that you feel the need to kill your husband. Anyway, enough about the prisons. That's where I am. There is one more story about a year ago. No, anyway, doesn't matter. I was talking to the group, because what I do with them is tell them to look at one another. It's this whole Bible verse of I am fearfully and wonderfully made. You are. I'm sorry, I have to tell you that this thing that we're doing on, and I'm so guilty of it now, this film story, Slice of Light, we interview Christian people, how they live their lives in their work situation and at home, which isn't always all that easy. So when I heard that there were going to be men in the audience, I send a message to the producer and I say, there are men in the audience. I'm going to be talking strange things. And she sent a message back, and she said, if there are men in the audience, you have to have a beginning and an end and a point to it in the middle. Don't go wandering off, as you are prone to do. Anyway, I worked it out last night, my beginning, my middle, and my end for the men. I'm sorry, guys. I hope you can follow the gist of it. Okay, so getting back to where, what was I about to say? Where was I? Story during. Sorry? Ach, you adoring, thank you. So, okay, so we're in, men listen, even if they have, if I wander. I'm sorry, it's because I have so much to share, and I want to, sorry, just listen to the mic, really. I don't want to, I do pray before, every time I talk, and please, Lord, let me say what they need to hear. So, okay. So here we are, a year before, and we're, what I do with the women is first make them look at one another's faces, because we all believe we're ugly, believe it or not, and just make them do the proportional face. So you can even look at the person next to you, you can look at me. And look, our eyes are in the middle. If you were to, okay, I have very high hair to make me look taller than I am. If you were to flatten your hair, so to there, your eyes are in the middle, those of you who do art. Your eyes are in the middle of your face, proportionally. Three of your heads fit on your shoulders, okay? Your mouth, the corner of your lips, go through the middle of your eyes. So this is an amazing thing, and my kids get a bit distressed with me and say, Mommy, don't be so rude about Mr. Zuma. But if you look at Zuma, he looks as though his eyes are on the side of his head. I'm not being unkind, it's the truth. And then you see someone else and they look as though their eyes are really, really, really close together. But now this is what's so fascinating. So the corner of your mouth goes through the middle of your eye, whether your eyes are on the side of your head or if they're close together. Here's the thing. It all depends on your bridge here. So if you have a sharp bridge, okay, it will give the appearance that your eyes are close together. They're not. It just looks that way. And if you have no bridge, like Mr. Zuma, it's completely flat, it gives the impression that your eyes are further apart. So, I promise you, you can all go home and look in the mirror. The corner of your mouth without smiling goes through the middle of your eye. Isn't that amazing? You are fearfully and marvelously made. Okay, why am I telling you this? If you were to measure your eyes, sorry, I suddenly realize I'm next to you. From there to there to there, exactly the same. But it's the bridge thing that makes it look close together or further apart. So this is where I come in with makeup hints on what to do, but I won't be giving makeup hints today. The guys are being so brave. Okay. Okay, here's the thing. If you have a flat bridge, not quite like Mr. Zuma, but still, you have to bring your eyeliner right across, you know, from corner to corner, to draw your eyes in closer together. If your eyes are far, that's far apart, Mr. Zuma, if they're close together, you don't bring your eyeliner right across, because then you're going to really look like your eyes are close together, and you're going to look weird. So then you just put a little bit on the outside, and you put a little bit of shimmer, just a little dot of shimmer, on the inner corner, and that then opens your eyes, and then you look normal. Okay. And another trick with blush, this is what I do with the people in prison, so you wanted to know, okay. So there's your eyes, your ears. Did you know that ears are the only thing that's not kind of in the same place? If you look at my ears are low. They're right in line with my mouth. Some people's ears are higher. They're in line with their nose. Some people's ears are right up here. So it's amazing if you look, your cheekbone is in line with it. Well, with age, you know, my cheeks are kind of down here. You see, old ladies always have the blusher on like that, because the cheeks used to be up there. And then they get down there. So to put your blusher in the right place, ladies, it's as if you're joining the tip of your nose to the top of your ear. And that puts it in exactly the right place for your face. And I also once had to teach a blind woman how to do makeup. So I practiced putting on makeup in the dark. And here's the thing, what they were taught in blind school is to do that and next to their nose and then put that finger, middle finger, in their ear and the other one up there, which is exactly what I was teaching, as if you're joining the tip of your nose with the top of your ear. Isn't it amazing? So then it's always in the right place. So right, so I'm teaching all these people this and I'm telling them now, isn't this amazing? Isn't this incredible? You are fearfully and marvelously made. The word says so. While you were yet in your mother's womb, he created you. You are an artistic masterpiece. How beautiful is that? I walked around from the age of 12 to the age of 39 believing I was fat and ugly. Then my neighbor, who was a Baptist minister, came to visit me at work and he said, Steely, I've got to talk to you. I can't get you out of my mind. And I said, get away from me, you're a married man and a minister, what's wrong with you? And he said, Silly, why do you always make a joke of everything? I said, it's my way of coping. Anyway, he said, you've got to make right with God. And I said, but as a Christian, I get Jesus in my heart. I mean, I've been going to Sunday school since I was two. My opa was a ouderling, my dad's a diak, and my mother used to vukker met melk dat and everything for the kerk bazaar, you know. Of course I'm a Christian. Good grief. And he said, as simple as anything, he said, no, Steady, he's in your head, he's not in your heart. And I said, what do we do? And he said, we pray. And we prayed, and I cried for 3 days. I cry easily. But it wasn't sad. It was just healing. So I phoned all my friends, guess what, I'm a Christian. Yes, we know you've been a Christian your whole life. Wara, wara. No, I was pretending. And then, things just changed. But he said to me, don't tell your husband, because I'm one of these people who take on a new hobby every year. And he said to me, Peter's going to think that this is just a new hobby. And after a couple of months, Peter said to me, I don't think you love me anymore, because you don't fight with me anymore. I used to be quite a tiger. And there it was, the manifestation that Christ was in me. And it was truly amazing and wonderful. And it's every day is just an incredible walk. And I do want to share something else with you. I know we don't look at the clock in this church, but it's okay. Just some stories. Now, I didn't finish the prison story, man. The one where I was doing all the face thing. Well, I do that with all them, but okay, this was the last one that I did last year. And there's this one white woman in the group. And what I tell them after I've shown them their proportions and that, isn't it amazing? You see, you are fearfully and marvelously made. And there was a white woman with blonde hair who was as mislook as anything, wouldn't participate in anything. And, okay, so 3 weeks later, Joe phones me and he says that he just went past and went in to check on these ladies again. And the change in them you wouldn't believe. Apparently they were always bickering and fighting with one another. And they all, you know, have a black pencil with which they shave off their eyebrows and draw. I mean, most people used to do this. Shave off the eyebrows and draw a straight, you know, like black little arches. And then no one had done that. They'd all shaped their eyebrows the way I taught them to. They were all looking wonderful. They were peaceful. They were doing their arts and crafts. They'd do amazing things. Also teaching them things that when they leave the prison, they're things they can do to make money. And there was this woman, her name's Mari, who would never pick up a needle, a knitting needle, anything. She wanted nothing to do with this. And there was Mari. They all were beautifully made up, all doing their crafts, no fighting, no bickering. And Mari is making, they cut black garbage bags into strips and then they knit or crochet with it. And they make handbags. Maury had a stapel of handbags next to her. And Joe went to her and he said, Maury, what happened? I mean, you wouldn't participate in anything before. And she said, I shouldn't mention this in Hallowed Walls, but they call me the White Oprah, which is no claim to fame. Anyway, so she said, the White Oprah was here. And she told me that I'm fearfully and marvelously made. Isn't that wonderful? If you can just touch one person's life, it's just a little thing like that. Okay, so that's the end to that story. It was just really wonderlick. But now they just, I did pray to God this morning to say things that I need to say. One of them, and I'm not saying anyone here is guilty of that, I had a stormy marriage, if you want to say that, because my father brought me up, just because you're a woman does not make you a second-rate citizen, and in life you fight for what you want. So, on the way to church to get married, my dad said, now, my darling, if you want your marriage to work, you do what your husband wants. You do what your husband says. And I said, what? My whole life has been a lie. You've always taught me to fight for what I want, and now I've got to do what my husband wants. So, long story short, the first couple of years in my marriage was stormy because I was not submissive, which now is a pleasure to do, believe it or not. So one of my brides, who knew nothing about me, they come for a trial, it's all about them, they discuss the wedding, what they're wearing, what they want me to do or not to do, and then I see them on the day, I do the makeup, and I never see them again. Exactly the same with this woman, and this was like about 6 months after her wedding. It was December, my husband and kids were overseas on holiday, and I was joining them. I was flying out the next day. So this lady phones, she says, Stella, ik moet met jou praat. Kan ik kom kuier? I said, no, nee, ik vlieg morgen uit, ik moet nog pak. She says, oh, that's okay. Ik het een woord van die Here. Wanneer kom jy terug? Now, you don't say to someone who says you've got a word from the Lord, come back in 6 weeks' time. So I said, come, but you're not even coming in. I'm not giving you tea, anything. Anyway, her husband sat in the car outside. She came to the door, and she said, God wants you to know that your father can never be your husband, and your husband can never be your father. And God needs you to cut soul ties with your father. And I said, but I love my father. I'm not ready to cut soul ties with him. He was a great man. And she said, that's okay. I've brought the word, I've been obedient, what you do with it is your business. So I said, okay, let's pray and we'll cut the soul tie. And while she was praying for the soul tie to be cut, when you're cutting the soul tie, it dawned on me as clear as anything that sadly, I was comparing my husband to my father. And many of us do that. If it's not a father figure, it's a big brother figure. But we don't respect our husbands for who they are. And sure, I cried the entire night. I couldn't wait to get to England to tell my husband I was sorry. And my wonderful husband said, so I tell him the story. First of all, he's outraged. Who does she think she is? She doesn't even know you. She doesn't know your father. Your father was the most wonderful man. Of course you would look up to him. Great testimony. You knew my dad. For a son-in-law, but I can say the same about my new son-in-law. He's a wonderful man. So I tell Peter the story. He's outraged. So I said, please, will you accept my apology? Because I'm sorry I've been unfair to you. It'll make you feel better, fine, okay. But that was the turning point, when we can respect our husbands for who they are and not to compare them to other people. That's huge. And I needed you to know that, if there's anybody who's guilty of that. This is your moment to make right and to cut the soul tie. There was another one, but it slipped out of my mind, so maybe it wasn't that important. Think for a second. That was the biggest one, which was life-changing for me. Okay. Then there was another word that I absolutely love, Zephaniah, Zephaniah 3 at the end of it, that the Lord rejoices over you with singing. Can you even imagine such a thing, that God would look down on us and just be blown away? And then at the end of Haggai as well, I have made you my signet ring. Phew. So as, you know, signet rings that in the old days they used to close an envelope with wax and then seal on it. It's his seal. He's placed his seal on us. And we are his signet ring. Therefore, we have to place his seal on others. Huge. God is good. Thank you for listening to me.